The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson. And this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. If you're not yet familiar with B Corp, it's a certification program that measures a company's entire social and environmental impact. There are now more than 4,000 certified B Corporations around the world, several of which we've featured on this podcast. Sipsmith Gin, Stone & Wood Brewing Company, and South Australian winery, Unico Zello. In February, Maker's Mark joined this elite group of businesses. It's the first distillery in Kentucky and the largest distillery in the world to achieve B Corp certification. And in this special episode of the Drinks Adventures podcast, produced with the support of Maker's Mark, you're going to hear about some of the environmental initiatives it's undertaken to safeguard the future of bourbon, which of course is ultimately an agricultural product. We're joined this episode by Rob Samuels, an eighth generation whiskey maker and the grandson of Maker's Mark founder, Bill Samuels Sr. Also with us is Trent Chapman, Marketing Director, Oceania Region for Beam Suntory, Maker's Mark's parent company. Later on in the interview, we cover the ingredients and production practices that underpin the Maker's Mark style and the evolution of the bourbon industry in Kentucky, where 10 new distilleries opened in 2021. The B Corp milestone comes as Maker's Mark continues its rapid growth in markets such as Australia. The distillery released a new expression, Maker's 46, in 2010. But the international growth has largely been driven by Classic Maker's, which for almost 60 years was the only whiskey it produced. I asked Rob first up about the significance of this singular focus by Maker's at a time when many of its peers are seemingly bringing out new whiskies every other week.
You know, it's interesting you ask about that because the average bourbon distillery makes dozens and dozens of different expressions. For the better part of 60 years, we were the only distillery in the world to make one product. Food & Wine magazine 2 years ago brought together 30 of the most respected whiskey leaders, master distillers, brand owners, whiskey writers, and they actually as a group ranked what they viewed as the 25 most important bourbon brands that have ever been made. And all but two in that group said Maker's Mark is the most important bourbon brand that's ever been produced. So one of the standards I have is, when we do anything, is it worthy of the most important bourbon brand that's ever been made? We want to innovate. We want to push flavor boundaries. We want to release new things that we think our customers would be interested in, but it needs to be of a certain standard.
One thing I heard your father say recently was that Maker's Mark has never sourced and never sold. And I think that what that must mean is we've never sourced whiskey and we've never sold whiskey to other people that they can bottle under their brand.
96% of bourbon comes from Kentucky, and I think we are, to my knowledge, I think we are the only distillery in Kentucky that has always only ever been a single source of supply. So every drop of whiskey that's ever been in a bottle of Maker's Mark, we made. And if you were standing inside our distillery today, we could look you in the eye, and every single drop of whiskey made at our distillery has always only ever been in a bottle of Maker's Mark.
Have there been times when it's been tempting to go down that path to fulfill growth?
Well, you know, for the first 30 years, we had no customers. I mean, literally all of our customers were here in Kentucky, and were it not for Kentuckians, I don't think Maker's Mark ever would have survived. And thankfully, here in the home of bourbon in the very beginning, many Kentuckians fell in love with this idea of a more elevated bourbon. But there was this awesome moment of discovery in 1981. And we think it was the first time ever that the Wall Street Journal center column front page featured a story on a privately held company. And the Wall Street Journal told this story of a quirky little distillery in Marion County, Kentucky, that goes against the grain to make its mark. And the Wall Street Journal said Maker's Mark is a model of purposeful inefficiency. which was exactly the way our founders thought about everything. The goal was never to be the biggest, but you had a craftsman and his wife with an overriding commitment to the vision. But since that moment in time, we've had more demand than supply every year, and we've sold every single drop of available bourbon every single year. But I can share with you, given Trent's leadership and the opportunity and the passion from Australians for an elevated bourbon, that Australia is very much an important part of our business today and the future of what we'll create, which is pretty exciting.
Maker's Mark is definitely playing a really active role in reshaping the bourbon category within the Australian marketplace, and it's something we're immensely proud of. We know Australians love bourbon. It's the drink of choice for spirits drinkers within the Australian marketplace. To have Maker's Mark as the fastest growing bourbon brand or fastest growing whiskey brand, is an amazing result. We're now approaching sort of about 10 share of the bourbon category in the full bottled spirits, which is a long-term goal or aspiration we set, and we're very much, ahead of plan in that regard.
Now, I think it was 11 years ago that Maker's 46 was introduced. How much has that product contributed to your growth since then?
And my father, as he was nearing retirement, he wanted to create his perfect expression of who Maker's Mark could become. He wanted to accentuate his favorite flavor camps that live within Maker's Mark, make a little bigger, bolder, amp up the baking spices, a little more nutmeg, and that taste vision would become known as Maker's 46. It's finished with Profile 46 French oak finishing staves. The finishing is time and temperature sensitive, so it happens in our industry's only limestone whiskey cellar. And it's been fun because it's allowed us to innovate with purpose. You know, there's a lot of things we could go do tomorrow if it were only about pushing out volume and maximizing revenue in the short term. But it's more about how do we stay true to our founding vision, maintain the pioneering spirit of our founders. And that idea of Maker's 46 helped us give birth to what I'm holding here, which is our industry's only custom barrel program. You know, we started asking ourselves, what if we let the leading restaurants and bars of the world in faraway places like Australia create their perfect expression of who Maker's Mark can become? So this year, we will have 1,850 global restaurants, bars, package stores who make the pilgrimage to Kentucky and literally design their perfect expression of Maker's Mark through our private select program.
The growth of Maker's 46, has any of that kind of cannibalized, you know, the main product, or has that all been on top of the growth of the original Maker's Mark?
In Australia, definitely on top. Yeah. It's all incremental. We cherish every drop that we can offer to Australian consumers, much like our luxury Japanese whiskey portfolio. So we balance that across Maker's Mark Red Top, or the core brand, Maker's Mark 46, and then very selective with Private Select and the accounts we partner with that. But yeah, Maker's Mark, we struck a chord with Australian bourbon and whiskey lovers more broadly, and it's just now up to how we strategically balance those three brands and the future. We will do more with Maker's 46 over the next 3 years, now that we've sort of built a groundswell or a longer tail of sort of infrequent users of Maker's Mark. So, you know, introducing them to Maker's 46 will play a big role over the next 3 years as we look for that next wave of growth and, you know, the next opportunity for Australians to find an occasion where they can enjoy a little bit different twist, I guess, on Maker's Mark.
And Rob, now that you're in the chair there and your father's moved on, we're not going to see a proliferation of new products coming onto the market under the Maker's Mark label on your watch.
What's most important to me, and we talk about it as innovating with purpose, we talk about it as, I mean, literally the guiding light for everything we do is very much inspired by our founders. That includes innovation. It includes higher purpose. And, you know, one of the legacies our founders instilled in all of us is, beyond making a beautifully handmade bourbon, having a place and a brand that points out into the world and stands for more and gives back to society. And it was a big moment for our team when we had gone through this exhaustive benchmarking session through the B Corp assessment, and Maker's Mark qualified to become the first distillery in Kentucky, and I think the largest distillery in the world, to become B Corp certified. It was a big commitment. We had essentially two or three of our team members basically dedicated through this pretty exhaustive benchmarking across all aspects of our supply chain, how we engage and treat our team members at the distillery, the sustainability leadership, our involvement and engagement with the community. And Maker's Mark qualified to become the first distillery in Kentucky, and I think the largest distillery in the world, to become B Corp certified.
And maybe you can tell us, Rob, about some of the most significant initiatives that Maker's Mark has undertaken in order to achieve that certification.
It's interesting. Even whiskey lovers who think of themselves as pretty sophisticated lovers of whiskey, they don't always associate the whiskey in the glass as an agricultural product. And ultimately, the whiskey that we make comes from nature. Our distillery itself is a National Historic Landmark. The distillery footprint represents less than like 3 or 4% of the property that we have. So we manage hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of acres of nature, thinking about the future and a 100-year vision to help ensure that that whiskey is sustainable for the next generation of whiskey lovers. As an example, to my knowledge, Maker's Mark is the only distillery in Kentucky that actually owns its own water source. So we manage, not only do we own our own water source, but we own all of our watershed, and we manage 600 acres as a natural water sanctuary. We're mapping the reference genome of American white oak right now, which has never been done before, which we believe will influence in a pretty significant way the future sustainability of American white oak. We've created the most significant American white oak repository to understand the resiliency of American white oak across the American white oak growing region, a solar array that has offset all of the energy for all of our warehouses. It's not selectively embracing higher purpose. It's really living the values in everything we do. Maybe one of the proudest moments and I had nothing to do with this, one of the proudest moments for me as a Maker's Mark team member was March 16th of leading into the pandemic. The governor of Kentucky made the very difficult decision to shut down all the bars and restaurants in Kentucky. And as you know, so many of the independent restaurant community, the bartenders, the servers, they don't have a safety net. And one of our team members here in Kentucky partnered with a really well-known chef who had transformed quickly his restaurant into a relief kitchen. And within 3 weeks, we had partnered with this leading chef to open up 21 satellite locations to feed ultimately 4 million out-of-work bartenders, servers, and their families.
And Rob, you talked before about the, you know, creating the world's largest repository of American white oak trees and, you know, the genome mapping project. Why are they such important initiatives for the bourbon industry?
Well, imagine if there's ever American white oak under pressure, like the chestnut tree, which has been wiped out in this country, or the ash tree, which is currently under great pressure and is being wiped out. There's great benefit from a scientific standpoint to understand the genetics and build in resiliency to the species so that as an industry beyond even bourbon, that we can react. So the University of Kentucky pulled a tissue sample about 2.5 years ago from what they believe is one of the two or three oldest American white oak trees in Kentucky. It's believed to be upwards of 400 years old. It's actually located on this 8-acre peninsula of land that sort of leads into our water source. And in addition to mapping the reference genome, there are 23 states in this country where American white oak is grown. And, you know, you start asking yourself, based on the compounds that influence flavor, what are the differences? What's the flavor range of difference that can be achieved? And based on what we're learning thus far, it's quite wider than we ever imagined. So over a 3-year period with the University of Kentucky, we're planting 15,000 American white oak trees, representative of all these different regions, to better understand the strength of American white oak and the flavor range that can exist.
What do you think have been, you know, the other most significant initiatives that you've undertaken for Maker's Mark since taking the reins from your father?
You know, I spend most of my time thinking about our team, the engagement, the culture, the higher purpose, innovating with purpose, working with important leaders like Trent, thinking about this global ambition, expanding the distillery in a way that stays true to my grandfather's vision. And then what's it look like for this brand to really make a difference in the world?
James, I'll just add, because Rob's too humble, and I was fortunate enough to work with his father, Bill. The one thing that I would say that Rob's done, when you visit, and we're not there yet, but we're very close, when you visit any good bar on the planet, you'll be able to enjoy a Maker's Mark. So that globalization of Maker's Mark, I believe, will be Rob's legacy.
So 11 years ago when your father finished up, the brand didn't quite have the same international footprint that it does now.
No, it didn't. And it's folks like Trent who are helping blaze the trail. And it's interesting, you know, we live in such an era where we're, you know, in our industry and well beyond our industry, so many products are invented by marketers, they're created by agencies. And when you peel back the layers, they're almost exposed. There's just not a lot of authenticity. And we're blessed that Maker's Mark was born from the vision of a craftsman and his wife, and it's real. And whether you're in Sydney or Melbourne or Cape Town, South Africa, or Paris or New York, you know, there seems to be more and more customers drawn to things that are real and authentic.
What do you think it is about the Maker's Mark liquid specifically that has obviously resonated with consumers as well in terms of the flavor profile?
Our family had made sort of a rough, aggressive test of manhood whiskey for 160 years. That's where very much of the category was for decades and decades. And my grandparents actually lit ablaze that family recipe, symbolic of their commitment to chase a very different taste vision. And you know, my grandfather's taste vision when he set out to create what would become Maker's Mark was to create a rich, creamy, full-flavored, balanced bourbon, a full-strength bourbon straight out of the barrel that you could hold on your palate or hold on your tongue without blowing your ears off. And there's each and every step of the process contributes to that taste vision. And literally everything we do inside our distillery, to my knowledge, is unique, different, distinct from any distillery in America. And I, you know, that's really what I'm proudest of, and I know our team is really proud of, is that we have maintained the purposefully inefficient process and remain true to that that taste vision. And it's just, you know, so some of these whiskeys are interesting, but you almost have to work hard to like them. And Maker's Mark, you don't have to work hard to like.
And that also, that does start with the mash bill as well, doesn't it? You know, there's no rye, so it does kind of make for a softer bourbon expression.
Yes.
Is that correct?
So many of the bourbons had always used rye as a flavoring grain. Our family had used rye for hundreds of years. And one of the reasons my grandparents attributed American whiskey and bourbon in particular to being a little abrasive, a little bitter on the palate, was rye is the flavoring grain. And it's much like you think about the flavor range of rye bread. Rye bread celebrates spice, but it can be a little abrasive. So my grandparents actually baked loaves of bread in the family kitchen, experimenting with different potential flavoring grains before deciding to use soft red winter wheat as the flavoring grain. And it's, if you were on site with us at Star Hill Farm today, we actually have 35 different varietals of wheat that we're partnering with academia to really understand the flavor range that we can achieve through wheat as a flavoring grain. And then what's the influence of regenerative farming on ultimately achieving flavor?
How much has the production process evolved at Maker's Mark from a technical standpoint? I'm going to assume that when the brand was created, that you know you wouldn't have had the same level of sophistication around you know controlling all of your processes, and obviously technology's come a long way since then.
It's a balance. I mean, I think if you were to open up, we have the very first bottle of Maker's Mark signed May 8, 1958. And if you were to open that bottle today, I believe it would taste very, very similar to what you would find on the back bar in Australia. So we embrace technology where it can help us manage our taste standard across all aspects of flavor generation. But ultimately, when you see the word handmade on the label of Maker's Mark, what handmade means to us is full sensory engagement of our team members. So there are distilleries, breweries all over the world today where you'll have over automation, one person, computers, pushing buttons, making whatever it is they're making. And we have a little bit of that, but we still have human involvement and it's full sensory engagement. Managing consistency really resides with our tasting panel, 25 individuals, 18 women, 7 men, but we taste Maker's Mark 5 times before we bottle. So we're tasting off the still as it goes in the barrel, through the rotation of the barrel in the maturation process, and then ultimately we bottle to taste.
But Rob, you described the level of sophistication around your ingredient selection, for example, in relation to the wheat. What about your oak selection process? Because I imagine that that would have really evolved and become more technical and specific over the years also.
Not a whole lot. I mean, it's if you were with us on the cooperage that we buy all of our barrels from is 9 miles from the distillery. The Boswell family make bourbon barrels for Maker's Mark and many other distilleries. I think if you were to ask Brad Boswell, who's he leads the company, the family business, and on his business card, it doesn't say CEO, it says wood chef. I mean, his his passion is flavor extraction through oak. And I think he would say with a smile that Maker's Mark is the most difficult customer that he deals with, because we have a very high standard for our barrel specification. All of the American white oak that we use that will ever become a Maker's Mark barrel is seasoned for a year. And that natural seasoning of the oak leaches out the tannins in the oak. The way you taste tannins in the wood when it comes together with the whiskey is a little abrasive or a little bit of bitterness. And as we discussed, our founders wanted to get the bitterness out of the whiskey. We have a higher quality oak, so there's fewer knots in the barrel. We have thicker heads, and ultimately that's about recovery, because we lose about 25% of what starts in the barrel through the angel share.
Now, tell me about, you know, how things are going in Kentucky generally with, you know, the bourbon trail, which I think your family was kind of pretty integral in establishing that many years ago. And now I'm sure there's a lot more stops on the bourbon trail than there would have been back then, you know, with all the new distilleries that have sprung up. So I'm just interested to know how the bourbon scene's evolved there.
It's so energized. It's exciting for Kentucky. Kentucky's distinctive culture is bringing in so many customers, consumers from all over the world to experience bourbon. And my dad actually shared with me a bit of bourbon trivia that I had never heard before. But coming out of Prohibition from 1933 to 1990, in Kentucky, there was only one new licensed distillery in Kentucky, and it was Maker's Mark. Last year, there were 10 new licensed distilleries in Kentucky. Since my father retired 11 years ago, there have been 90 new licensed distilleries opened in Kentucky. And my grandparents just thought differently about the place. And it was my grandmother, Margie Samuels, who said, let's not design the distillery like a factory, like an engineer would traditionally design an engine, you know, a manufacturing site. She said that if the place were to celebrate the values of his handmade bourbon, that the place would become the soul. So she set everything up. She designed each and every step of the process as a thinking about swinging open the doors to let friends come experience it. And we hosted guests formally at Maker's Mark for the better part of 30 years before the next distillery began to host. But today, there are dozens and dozens of distilleries on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. The Kentucky Bourbon Trail is you know, rebounded coming through COVID and hosted record visitorship in 2021. And it's just our vision for the Maker's Mark Distillery on Star Hill Farm is to become the most culturally rich, endearing, and environmentally responsible home place of any brand in the world. And it was my grandmother who said that since we're a little off the beaten path and we're a little more challenging to get to, that it's always important that we work hard to exceed expectations.
Fantastic, Rob. Well, thanks so much for your time. It's been a really fascinating chat.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, James.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.